I wanted to just let you know that in Lisa and JR and what they were sharing, I don't know how many of you have kids that are in that sort of 20 to 28-year-old, yeah. And it's interesting, even in looking at my son, who was raised in church, you know, raised through camp at Mount Hermon, even he now, he just turned 25 in April, he has gone through those phases of starting to question all kinds of things, you know? Mom, you know, I'm kind of into science now. I'm sort of into that. I mean, he's really doing a lot of this stuff, and I'm trying to not panic because I know I know he's accepted Christ. I know he's already made that decision. But there's a lot of things I'm trying to just back off and step away from my traditional thinking and just let him know that God loves him exactly where he is. And my affirmation to him on and on is, you know, Lord knows you, Renzo. He lives inside of you. You've accepted him. You do what you need to do to find out, but I know where you'll return, you know, and just to instill that confidence over and over again. And it's so much about that relationship and keeping that open with our kids when they're at phase, in that phase, if you have kids in that phase, you know, some of them skip right over and stay right with it. Hey, I just wanted to show two things real quickly. Lisa wanted to share a book with us that she forgot to mention when she was up here. So I just want to give her a moment to share with you a good tool.
Yeah, a lot of people ask me, is there something I can read? And there's a lot of books on postmodernism, but this book is called The Emerging Church. And the author is Dan Kimball, who happens to be the pastor of a local church, the church where I attend, Vintage Faith Church. And it has a lot of good descriptions about moderns and postmoderns and what you could do in your church to make sure that you are welcoming and that you are able to transcend this gap and offer the gospel in a way that's attractive to both. So The Emerging Church, Dan Kimball.
Very good. Thanks, Lise. I also wanted to just tell you one more other thing before we bring Nate up here. We have produced what we were hoping for would be an inspirational tool for you all as our associate family, because we know the most viable, important advocate for this ministry and for our associate family is you. You obviously have chosen to take that step in and to commit in a significant way to this ministry. And when you share with friends and invite them, and we know many of you have, you know, you need to be a part of what's happening here. We produce this, and I know that many of you, hopefully all of you at least, received one or two of these in the mail. The second one was sent for you to give away. Well, I want you to know that we have lots of these. We would love for you to use these. Is this familiar? Yeah, a lot of. Okay. So as you flip through here, I can't flip and hold the mic. So as you flip through here, it does tell the associate's story, similar to the video you saw, but expanded. And then also in the back, it's got the contact information. So for folks that you want to be able to just, we would love to share with them. They can call me, JR, Deb, Dave, Lisa, anyone will be glad to tell a little bit more if they have questions. So I've put several out in the back table. Don't worry, there's more under the table. So help yourself, take them home. Please give them out, okay? Coffee table book, who knows? Conversation starter. Alrighty, without further ado, I know a lot of you have been wondering about the land. Many of you have already heard about the land. It is one of the most exciting things happening right now at Mount Hermon. Nate has got this so intrinsically ingrained in him, he just eats, breathes, and sleeps Velocity Bike Park and Felton Meadow. So we're excited to bring you up to date on sort of the latest things that are happening and where we are now in the whole process and how we're using this ministry tool in a really creative and exciting way, which will bring what Lisa and JR talked about into practical application. So Nate Peppercorn, why don't you come on down? Let's welcome Nate.
Thanks for that welcome. Nice to see you all this morning. Everyone enjoy donuts? Oh, man, those are so good. I'm always a little bit sad when summer wraps up because we have a shortage of donuts around here. Good morning. My name is Nate Peppercorn, and I direct the Adventure Ministries Department here at Mount Hermon. And so that oversees all sorts of different kinds of stuff, everything from our canopy tour to some bike programs that we already have. Activity centers up at Ponderosa and down at Redwood Camp, the aquatics facilities. So it's definitely not all me. I have a very talented team that is surrounding me to help support me. and to really do all these different activities that are out there. So the reason that I'm up here today is to talk to you guys a little bit about the Velocity Bike Park, which you've probably heard some things about, but it's also to try and draw some connections between what Lisa and JR were speaking about this morning as far as postmodern ministry and how does that work and how does that all happen here at Mount Hermon and how is that a Mount Hermon enterprise, you know, because it looks a little bit different. It might feel a little bit different than, say, family camp or youth camp or other programs that you've participated in. So all of our adventure programs here at Mount Hermon, They're really built on a set of core philosophies or a set of core concepts. And it doesn't matter if it's the canopy tour or if it's the bike park or if it's, you know, some different things in between. It's built really on these foundational philosophies. Before we dive into what those are, though, I think that a useful metaphor, a useful analogy to think about the programs at Mount Hermon or just the Mount Hermon experience in general is there's several different ways that people can enter Mount Hermon or get to know Mount Hermon or experience Mount Hermon. So traditionally, and this is probably what a lot of you all have experienced, you've experienced the Mount Hermon program. And so the reason that you come to Mount Hermon and one of the primary draws of Mount Hermon is the program. And we have amazing programs here, world-class, phenomenal speakers, great music, great fellowship, you know, just these excellent programs. And so that's been a traditional way that people have come to Mount Hermon for years and years and years. Another reason, another way that people come to Mount Hermon or enter the Mount Hermon experience is through our facilities. So if you have been a part of a guest group, we work with several big churches, we work with youth groups, we work with all sorts of different kinds of people that are primarily coming to us because of our facilities, because we've got great food, we have the right size dining hall, we have, you know, different kinds of accommodations. And increasingly, we're getting to partner with them to actually develop programs symbiotically with them, which is kind of exciting. But that's kind of our conference season, is people coming for our facilities. The third way that people are coming to Mount Hermon, and this has really been emerging, I think, in the last several years and has really accelerated since I was able to join the team in 2010, and that's people coming because of the activities that we offer. And so this has been really prominently shown through our Redwood Canopy Tour, where people aren't necessarily looking for a Mount Hermon program or a Mount Hermon facility. They're looking to ride zip lines, and they want to do it in Santa Cruz. So they're looking on Google or, you know, Facebook or wherever they look to get their activity information. They find us, they reserve a tour, and they come on out. And, of course, when they come, they get more than just a tour. You know, they get a life-transforming opportunity in that two-hour time window out there in the trees. And so we're able to turn them on to and welcome them into the Mount Hermon experience and the Mount Hermon family. But the reason that they're coming is because of that activity. And increasingly, that's what people are looking for. They're looking for those activities to do themselves, to do with their families, to do with their friends. And just like Lisa shared this morning, activity is going to increasingly be the vehicle through which we can begin relationships with folks that would possibly never darken the doors of a church or, you know, sign up for our family camp program or send their kids to youth camp. But as we develop relationship with them through activity, we can welcome them into that experience. What's neat about this is that no matter how you get to Mount Hermon, you're going to experience all three of those things. You're going to experience program. You're going to have activities. You're going to enjoy the facilities. So no matter what your entry point is, you get the entire Mount Hermon experience. Hopefully that's a helpful way to kind of think about how we're inviting people into the Mount Hermon family. So as far as these philosophies go, this really has to do with not only our existing adventure programs, but the future of our ministry and kind of where we're going together as a ministry. Lisa and myself and a few other folks, we sat down and really tried to think strategically and intentionally about how do we define adventure ministries? What does that look like? How do we communicate that? What's the filter through which we kind of sift it to make sure that what we're doing is missional? And how do we explain that to folks? So really the first thing is that we, in all of the adventure ministries that we have, we really want to use creation as the context for that event to take place. That's one of the beautiful things about kind of the different adventure ministries that we have is they take place in creation. So we're taking folks that live in Silicon Valley, you know, commute a whole bunch, spend a lot of time indoors potentially, and we're getting them outside in God's creation. And, you know, that's been a hallmark of Christian camping really since it began, right? It started kind of with the, you know, early industrial revolution. Like, let's get people out of the cities. Let's get them back in creation because that's where God can speak. And that's as true today as it was 150 years ago. And so that's really intentionally part of the Adventure Ministries is we get people outside in creation. The second aspect of this is the all the concepts of experiential learning. So experiential learning has developed really into a full-fledged field of study, philosophy of education. A lot of people credit John Dewey with starting this, you know, back in the 40s, kind of after the wars. Just you're kind of recognizing that learning outside, learning experientially, doing things with your mind, body, soul, spirit all together is really powerful. It's a really different kind of experience than just sitting there passively listening to someone. You know, if it was up to me, we'd be outside walking around and, you know, experiencing things. But that's hard to facilitate with a group this size, too. But the experiential learning cycle is really prominent in all of our adventure ministries with the concept of we give someone an experience. And then through loving facilitation and relationship, we get to ask them about that experience. We get to really facilitate that experience towards growth and change. And that happens in all of our adventure programs, which leads us kind of right into the next piece, which is facilitating right relationships. It's been really fascinating to me operating the Canopy Tour these last 4 or 5 summers just to see how many people come do that experience by themselves. I wouldn't have expected that. But there's a lot of people out there that are hungry for a relationship, they're hungry for experiences, and they don't have anyone to share it with. And this can be the place where we can start connecting people. And we've seen this happen really powerfully on our Canopy Tour where, you know, a few individuals come by themselves, and by the end of that 2-hour experience, they're giving people high fives and hugging and promising to visit when they're in Ohio and, you know, exchanging business cards. It connects people in a really powerful way when we can facilitate those relationships through conversation, through our loving staff. And that leads to the final foundation of all of this is creating those worshipful connections. So again, by getting people out in nature, out in creation, by using the tools of experiential education, by facilitating the right kinds of conversations, it leads to these worshipful connections where people can understand what is a right relationship between me and my brother and sister, and ultimately, what does a right relationship look like between me and my Creator, between me and God. And so that's the underpinning of all of these different adventure-type ministries. And so all of those things are already existing. Those are already part of our current architecture and how we do programs, how we do ministries, how we reach these postmodern folks as well as the modern folks through the gift of activity. And so as we move into velocity, all of those things are going to remain true. So it's not a new, I guess what I want to communicate is it's not a new ministry model. It's something we've already been doing here. It's really just clarifying it and giving us even greater opportunities to get out there. So velocity is really a couple of different things. It's going to be both a bike park facility as well as a group of bike park programs. And so we've got some cool pictures here. This is actually a picture behind me of the property. And so that's kind of what the view looks like from about halfway up the mountain. It's a beautiful spot. You know, it's open. There's sunshine. There's flat spot. There's hilly spots. There's oak trees. It's just a really unique ecosystem in and of itself. And it's going to just be an amazing, amazing piece of property. So kind of going backwards and forwards at the same time, so we just talked about our philosophies kind of ministry. The Adventure Department, we've clarified 3 key goals or 3 kind of core values for ourselves. And those are the values of quality, authenticity, and inspiration. And so those are the values that we use to communicate frequently with guests, with our staff in terms of staff training. We've really built our whole team building program where we work with different corporations and different schools around these concepts of quality, authenticity, and inspiration. And so those, again, will be kind of the same guiding core values in the Velocity Bike Park. Moving forward with the next one here. It's really important to note that we wanted to drill down even just a little bit further, where we have, you know, we have these core values, we have our kind of our overarching philosophies, but then how do we actually do this ministry? You know, what does it look like? And so we have five ways that we really want this ministry to move forward and what the program actually looks like. So we call these our methodologies. Maybe this is a little bit heady for folks this early in the morning after donuts, but I think it's really important that you understand kind of all of the thought and intentionality that's going behind these various programs. So the first one is flexible. And this has to do with the programs as well as the facilities. We really want it to be as flexible as possible. And it's been interesting in this development process of kind of thinking about originally our original concept of even what the bike park was going to be and what we've settled on has changed and morphed absolutely for the better. And it's because we are approaching it with a flexible kind of loose grip and really looking and seeing, okay, what does God want us to do? What are the needs in the community? How can we reach the most diverse group of people possible? And so to do that, we have to keep our programming flexible. The next part is holistic, and this kind of speaks to that experiential education model where we want to have the opportunity to educate and minister to the whole person, mind, you know, body, spirit, relationship, all of it. And so, again, through Adventure Ministries, we get to do that really powerfully because people are using their bodies in relationship with other people in the great outdoors. It doesn't get any better. We recognize that folks are on a journey. And this is really, really important with what Lisa shared this morning. You know, we can't take someone straight from the bus stop down there in Felton, plunk them in the bike park, and then give them a three-point gospel message. You know, it just doesn't work. And so what we can do, though, is we can recognize that there's all sorts of different kinds of people, and they're all on this journey of faith, whether they know it or not. And so we want to work with people where they're at in that journey. Both the people that don't have a faith in Christ yet, as well as people that have had a faith in Christ for decades. You know, we want to work with people all over that spectrum. And so in order to do that, we just have to recognize that folks are on a journey. How can we be in relationship? How can we love them? What does God want us to do with them? And what does God want to do in their lives? Next one is being intentional, and we've already talked a little bit about that, but in order to have those kind of first three that we've just talked about, we have to be intentional in our program design, in our facility design, all those kinds of things. And then the last methodology is collaboration and being collaborative. It's been a really fun experience so far, even to just design the facility and design the program. You know, our team that we're working with to design the facility itself consists of at least 10 different consultants, experts in the field, all this sort of stuff. And it's just so powerful to see not only the relationships that are developing between us and these other design entities, but the personal relationships that are developing. You know, I've personally gotten to share my faith with three or four of these large design consulting firm, you know, kind of heads of the organization. And that's amazing. Like, I don't know that anyone else is getting that opportunity or if they have ever had that kind of experience of being in a relationship with someone like me that wants to share their faith with them. So it's been really neat to see that collaboration like that. And with this park especially, we have the opportunity to reach into local schools, the local bike community in Santa Cruz, all sorts of different kinds of areas to create collaborative relationships where we haven't had those opportunities until now. So we're really excited about that. So now what you want to hear about is the actual bike park itself. So the bike park, the Velocity Bike Park, again, it's two different things. It's a facility as well as a set of programs. And the two have really been developed symbiotically, and that's really, really important. It's an amazing experience for myself as an adventure guy, as a programmer, to get to look at a raw piece of land, get to develop this awesome team of consultants around me and friends around me, and just look at it intentionally and strategically. You know, all the other times in my career, we've either come into somewhere where a program exists and we have to build some facility around it, or what usually happens is a facility exists and we have to build programs around it. This time we get to start 100% from scratch, and we get to sit and think, what is going to be best for the guest experience? What is going to maximize our ministry potential? Let's build it like that, and we can. So it's just absolutely phenomenal. As far as the facilities go, there's all sorts of different kinds of riding surfaces, features, different kinds of things. So really what the idea with the Velocity Bike Park is, we want this to be a world-class mountain bike facility. one of the leading, you know, bike facilities in the world. And it's already emerging that way. Just the buzz in the industry, in the community, no one has tried to tackle a project like this yet. And everyone's looking at it saying, like, is it going to work? Is it going to work? The answer is yes, it's going to be great. But, you know, people are really, really excited about it. So the mountain bike industry is in a renaissance right now. Last night, I actually got to go to a meeting hosted by Bell Easton Gyro Sports, which world headquarters is over here in Scotts Valley. Fox Suspension Parks is here in Scotts Valley. Santa Cruz Bicycles is here. Specialized is over the hill. So there's all this bike industry in the area. There was actually a meeting last night that I was invited to attend to share about Velocity with all of these industry executives about the mountain biking renaissance in Santa Cruz County. And we're a part of it, which just gives me goosebumps. I got goosebumps right there. It's so exciting that you know, we as a Christian organization are being invited on a level playing field with these, you know, very secular industry leaders. And I get to go there and say, talk about Velocity Bike Park, talk about how it's great for families, talk about how Mount Hermon is a Christian camp. And they're like, yay, that's great. That just doesn't happen very often in the world. So very, very exciting. So all that to say, we have this mountain biking renaissance where there's all sorts of different kinds of mountain bike riding now. It's not just one bike that you hang in your garage. You got to hang 3 or 4 or 5 bikes in your garage, which I love because I just love bikes. But so there's different kinds of bikes for all these different kinds of riding, and most facilities don't combine the multiple riding surfaces or the multiple genres of riding kind of all together. So if you go to North Star, if you go to Whistler, you know, you can ride a downhill bike, which is a big, expensive, you know, $8,000 bicycle. If you go to your local park, you might have a pump track, and then you have kind of like a little BMX bike, like maybe you had when you were a kid. If you go ride up at UCSC, then you have a cross-country bike, and that's a different thing. Or if you go race, you might have an enduro bike, and that's a different thing. And if you like to jump, there's a jump bike. But usually those things are all in different locations. And even though that's all mountain biking, those groups of people don't necessarily mingle a whole bunch. At our facility, we have the opportunity to build riding surfaces for each one of those different kinds of riders, and really create a comprehensive mountain bike community where those folks can get to know each other. We can teach them, which is going to be fantastic, and you can learn from kind of what the other folks are doing. It also creates opportunities for really intergenerational types of programming and intergenerational types of riding. So we can get, you know, if dad is into cross country and he's got the teenage son that likes to jump stuff, they can come to Velocity together. They can have an experience together where that doesn't happen really anywhere else. So potentially really, really exciting. So I could talk more about the actual facilities. You can grab me later and I can, you know, tell you about all the different kinds of riding surfaces and other cool stuff. But really the goal is to be able to reach as broad a demographic as we can so that we can hit them with our programs. As far as programs go, we are, again, are trying to reach as broad a demographic as possible. So we've been working with a great consultant team based out of Whistler and BC, kind of the epicenter of mountain biking up there. And we're really working to develop what I would consider to be the industry's first comprehensive skill-based development set for mountain biking. So if anyone in the room is a skier or has been a skier, you know that you can go to pretty much any ski resort in North America, and the Professional Ski Instructors Association has a curriculum, and you're a level 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, whatever it is. They have a whole bunch of like skills drills and clinics that you can go to, and you can learn how to become a better skier. And it's consistent, it's repeatable, it's really cool. That does not exist for mountain biking anywhere. So there's a whole bunch of individual entities that are maybe focusing on one aspect of riding or, you know, one kind of trick or whatever, but nobody's really sat down to try and figure out as an industry, how do we teach people how to mountain bike ride? Most of us that learned how to mountain bike ride, we got a bike and we went out and we got hurt and we decided, don't do that, do something else, and that's how we learned. Which is good for people that like high-risk activities. But if you're not in that category, having the ability to have instruction is going to be really, really powerful. Plus, through that instructional content, that's where we get to make the relationships. That's where we get to share Christ with people. By having loving, caring, intentionally hired Christian staff, they're teaching these lessons. And, you know, eventually the kids looking up to the staff, that's really where that relational component comes in. And that's where we're really excited to develop things. So as far as the actual programs go, there's all sorts of different kinds that we're looking at. We're looking at day camp programs that would run Monday through Friday. And those would be largely for local kids, local commuter parents. We can do kind of a Monday, Wednesday, or a Tuesday, Thursday sessions that go for the whole summer, kind of more like a soccer sports camp kind of thing. We can do the same thing in the fall and in the spring. We can do winter camps. We're looking at spring break camps. And then, of course, there'll be individual skill lessons, kind of more like the ski resort model, where you come and you get your entry ticket, you rent your bike, and then you have a three-hour skill lesson. That could be in a group of four. It could be a one-on-one. We're looking at ladies' night and men's night and industry night and, you know, all sorts of different kinds of programs and different ways to get people in the door. And again, it goes back to that idea of how can we be flexible? How can we, you know, maximize use of the park, but really maximize our ability to minister to all these different kinds of folks? So we've been, you know, really, like I said, developing the facility, developing the program, and we're starting to ramp up the marketing engine as well. So we've had a few recent projects that have been really exciting. I don't have a slide for it, but I just shared last night that we got to, you know, invited to speak at this Renaissance of Mountain Biking thing. And there were some great connections made last night, even. I got to speak with Keith Bontrager, who is widely credited with being one of the inventors of mountain biking. And, of course, he lives here in Santa Cruz. And so he's heavily involved in Trek bicycles and product development. And, you know, he's just thrilled to death that this is happening in his backyard. And so, you know, again, just tons and tons of good things happening. Earlier in the spring, we were able to participate in this event, which was the Santa Cruz Mountain Bike Festival. And this is a local fundraiser put on by our local mountain biking club called the Mountain Bikers of Santa Cruz. It's kind of their big event for the year. It happens right before the Sea Otter Classic, which is probably the biggest bike event in North America that happens down at Monterey. But at this local event, there were over 9,000 people at this event. And almost all of them stopped by our booth to hang out for a little while. We were also able to provide the festival with this big green pillow over here. That's called an acrobatic airbag. And this is the first of its type on the West Coast right now. I was able to work with Mark, who's the principal of this company, to design an airbag specifically for biking. So the idea is you ride into this thing, you do your tricks, and you land on it, and it's a big pillow. And so if you don't land right, you don't get hurt, which is much better than learning on the dirt. But all the other airbags that are out there literally just look like a big pillow. So you kind of hit it and then you have to drag your bike off and there's no way to land on it. This one, it's kind of hard to see, but it's a wedge shape. So if you land on your pedals, you can actually ride out the back of it. And it was so neat to see kids doing this. So there was one particular local kid. His name's Kevin. He's a cute red haired guy. He's like 12. And he's insane. I mean, he does backflips and tail whips and bar spins and like all these crazy tricks. But on this, you know, he really wanted to learn the backflip corkscrew, you know, which is a backflip with a full twist in it. And so he was at this airbag like the whole first day Saturday, just hitting it. By the end of the first day, he had it. So then he took it over to what's called a mulch jump, which is a jump that has a great big mulch landing. Hit that and landed it. And then in Sunday, he was in the dirt jump contest. He had that trick, like in just one day. So the ability to progress riders and just their excitement of being able to learn a really difficult trick like that, I mean, that would take months of practice outside because you would crash three times and you need to go home and, like, ice up. He was able to just hit it and just learn it. And so it was really, really, it was just really powerful for me to see, like, how we can be involved with, like, this rider's progression. But, you know, every time he's up there, we're talking about it, you know. How did it go? What did it feel like? Oh, maybe try this. Did you throw your weight this way? Like, what was working? What wasn't? You know, so again, through that, being able to share that skill-based development with him, like, I know this kid now. So I run into him at the pump track, and, you know, we high-five and we talk. It's fantastic. So another event that we did recently was, I mentioned it, but was the Sea Otter Classic Bike Festival. And this is down at Laguna Seca in Monterey, and it's widely credited with being the biggest bike festival in North America. Somewhere around 65,000 people come to this in a given year. It's absolutely massive. So they have every kind of racing genre, all sorts of different kind of stuff. And so we've actually been invited to have our airbag at this next year, which will be great. So that'll be really fun. But Trevor behind me here, he actually won second place, one of my staff members. So that was neat in the slalom event. But again, just another great opportunity where we actually got to get out there, talk to folks about velocity, and just kind of start to share this vision. And so really that's, again, really what we're all about is getting to connect with people on that one-on-one basis. Oh, yeah, yeah. So you can see on Trevor here, we have this really cool Mount Hermon bike jersey. So as part of our marketing things, we've developed this racing team. And so we were actually at a race this morning across the street called Race Through the Redwoods, a local 10K. And so we have staff members. We have folks like you that are excited about, you know, fitness and, you know, excited about Mount Hermon and want to put the two together. So you put on a jersey and you go race. And it's fantastic. Like, just the relationships that we've been able to make through that have been really, really fun. Myself and Bill Fernald and Doug Klein and a few other folks were also avid road cyclists. So on our road cycling kit, it says Mount Hermon, and on the back it says Lives Transformed, which is really, really cool. So just recently we were on a ride together, and, you know, we're riding into a headwind, and so some guys kind of latched onto us and were just, you know, trailing us, not doing their share of the work, breaking the wind, but, you know, they latched onto us for about 20 miles, and, you know, they're just back there reading, like, we could hear them, like, Mount Hermon, what is that place? Oh, I think I've heard of that place. I think it's over in Santa Cruz. Lives Transformed. I wonder what that's all about. So, you know, when we get to the rest stop, we get to give them the full, like, here's all about Mount Hermon. Here's about what we do. We love Jesus, you know, just because we're out riding our bicycles. So, again, there's just all these really neat opportunities to collaborate, to interact with just folks locally and internationally, which has been really, really fun. So moving on to the site status, this is the part that everyone really wants to know. When do we get this thing going? That's a great question. I wish I had the answer to that. We have been involved in the county planning process, so we have to work with the local Santa Cruz planning department in order to get our site plan approved. Once that plan is approved, then we can actually go and apply for construction permits, and then we can start building the thing. It has taken longer than I had hoped, but I think maybe I was a little too optimistic in the beginning about the speed at which the county could get things done for us. So we're getting really close to having that planning department approval. Should be any month now, or literally any week. So we are tentatively scheduled for the second meeting in September, which I think is on the 24th, to actually sit down, and the planning department would then have their vote. So there's five folks. We have to get a 3 out of 5 vote, and then we're kind of off to the races. In the meantime, what we've been doing is developing all of our construction documents, and so those will be ready to go basically as soon as we have our planning department approval. We can put those out for proposal, we can start lining up contractors, and away we go. Alongside that, of course, we've been raising funds to actually build this thing. It costs a lot of money to build a bike park. And so through some really generous donations, we have a good chunk of what we need. We definitely have enough to get started, but there's still opportunities to participate to kind of bring the park to full fruition. There's a lot of other things that we could share just about that property in general. We're calling that entire property the Felton Meadow property. And there's lots of other stuff planned for it. There's expansion to Redwood Camp. There's a cool pedestrian bridge. There's a splash park. There's a day camp building, an aerial adventure course, community garden. So that property, you know, we're really leading with this Velocity program and Velocity Bike Park. But there's going to be really cool new programs and new opportunities to participate going on down there probably for the next decade, if not maybe 2 decades. Who knows? We'll see what the Lord's process is in that. So how to get involved? Prayer, please. Please pray for me, and please pray for the county planners. And in all seriousness, it's been really encouraging to me, even just in the last 6 months, to see, like I was sharing, the relationships that are coming about, even though the park doesn't technically exist yet, the ministry opportunities that God is bringing about just through getting to share and talk with folks about it. That's been really, really powerful. It's also been, really amazing to see, if I had time, we could share some of the stories of how we came to acquire the property. You know, there were miracles involved in that. Some of the funding that has come through already, there's miracles involved in that. So it's very clear that the Lord is behind this project. This isn't something that we in our humanity have cooked up because we think it's fun, although it will be. It really is the Lord leading us in this direction, and it's been very confirming to see that. So I just personally want to thank you guys for coming, for participating not only in this weekend, but just participating in Mount Hermon. And again, my hope and my desire is that you can see really based on what JR and what Lisa shared, how we at Mount Hermon are really trying to move this ministry forward, how we're trying to reach a generation that might not get reached for Christ, and how we're really going to use activity, at least in this case, we're going to use activity as the tool to draw folks into a relationship with Christ. Yes. So pray for me. I'm on staff. We also need prayer for staff to staff this park. That's kind of one of the biggest challenges that I run into in my existing department is we could continue to grow and grow and grow and grow. I need more staff to come alongside and help out. And so not just any staff. We want the best staff. Yeah, absolutely. And that's really important. So, you know, for this Velocity Bike Park, we very much want people that love the Lord, love people, and love riding bikes, preferably in that order. And so if you know those folks that are out there, we would love to collaborate with them. It's you know, obviously not everyone can move to Santa Cruz and come work at Velocity Bike Park, but I just think that the opportunities exist out there to collaborate with folks from kind of all over California. But yeah, I would really appreciate your prayers just thinking and moving forward, in prayer for those staff, because all of these programs, all these facilities are great. They don't work unless we have the right people, and it's really a people-driven ministry, so that would be great. Thanks, Carrie.
You hold on to that.
Okay, I'll hold on to this.
We're going to do a little stage management here. We had a great response yesterday in terms of the questions and answers, and we know that there are a lot more questions percolating than just what we talked about yesterday in terms of the facilities and the upgrades and the things that are happening here. So we're going to bring up JR and we're going to bring up Lisa for a little Q&A time, and we wrote this in because you are core. We want this group to understand more than anyone so you can feel confident in your commitment to this ministry, and you can feel confident in articulating to others about why you care and support this ministry. So this is a Q&A time about anything across the board. We have the Director of Advancement, Director of our Recreation and Adventure Facilities, the Director of Program and Marketing. And if they can't figure it out, we'll get back to you, okay? Because they probably can. Debbie and I are going to run the mics here. You guys are going to share. Are you okay? All righty.
This is definitely a modern question because I've been a little bit involved in the bike part in my own community. I know there are lots of things involved, liability and just staffing. Do you have people there, Mount Hermon staff, all the time? How is the liability thing handled? And when people just come, are there staff people there? It's not just left unstaffed, I'm assuming.
Yeah, correct. So, it's a little bit different model, and I didn't talk about that in too much detail, but in the bike realm, it's kind of like we have ski resorts that have bike parks, and then we have municipal bike parks that are maybe owned by a city or a county or something like that. This is a little bit in between, this experience, and so access to the park will be controlled, so it's not just a come-in, free-for-all kind of situation. And the what we call in the industry the comfortable carrying capacity of the park is actually not nearly as high as, say, a ski resort. You know, if we get 500 people there, it's going to feel like there's 500 people there. So one of the ways that we're actually controlling that is through the programs. And so there'll be large chunks of the day that are set aside only for programs. So you have to be a pre-registered, you know, program guest to have access to the park during those times. In other times where it's just open park, there'll be a ticket sales or entry fee kind of situation. There'll be seasons passes and things like that available as well. But again, the idea is that we're controlling who comes into the park. We're having the opportunity to have a relationship with them, even if they're just in a ticket sales format. There's going to be lift operators, there's going to be park supervisory staff, there's going to be folks at the concessions, you know, ski patrol, bike patrol, all of those kinds of situations. And so we've really found through research that the best way to limit injuries and limit our liability exposure is through the lessons format. There's been lots of good documented research on this in the ski industry as they've started bike parks that, you know, if you just turn people loose on a bike and give them a helmet, they quickly go out and injure themselves. But if you can creatively package it where they want to take a lesson and it's affordable and it makes sense, not only do they have a great time, they don't get injured, and they're much more likely to come back because of that relational component.
One of the things I like to talk most about the park is Nate's been working with world-class riders to actually develop curriculum for skills, and he can talk about it more knowledgeably than I can. But if you think of the American Red Cross swimming, you know, system where at each level you acquire a certain skill set, and then as you move around the country, you know, if you go to lessons and you've completed level 3 and you have your ARC card, you know, they'll let you take level 4. Nate and his team have been working on developing that from the ground up for the bike industry and the different kinds of bike riding that there are. So I'm hoping that, you know, 5 years from now in Pennsylvania or Florida, if somebody says, hey, I want to do this bike trail, they'll say, well, show us your velocity, you know, card or, you know, credential. We're trying to be on really the ground floor of developing that. Tell them about, like, the gravity and the, you know, the different ways, the different curriculums.
Yeah, so we're it's been really interesting to try and figure a lot of this stuff out, and it's given me the opportunity to work with some, like Lisa said, some world-class, like, Olympic coaches and, you know, professional dirt jumpers, and they all recognize that there's a need, especially for teaching kids, like bringing kids into the sport and doing it in such a way that they don't get injured or get discouraged, because when you get hurt, it tends to be discouraging. And so we've really broken it down to a skill-based thing. So there's certain key fundamental skills to riding a bike. I won't necessarily bore you with what they are, but there's 5 key fundamental skills. And they, yeah, balance is one of them, timing and coordination, gears and braking, position and balance, whatever. So anyway, we're immersed in this stuff right now. So based on those skills, though, then you can apply it in a pump track or at an airbag session or in a gravity-based downhill track or cross-country riding. And so from those skills, there's a whole bunch of really what I would call coaching drills for each specific genre. And like Lisa said, nobody has put all this stuff together yet. You can go to Whistler and you can get a downhill mountain biking lesson, but unless you own a downhill bike and ride there all the time, it doesn't necessarily cross reference to riding your cross-country bike. With this skill-based program, though, it will, which will be really helpful for the industry.
Vivian, you also asked about liability. And Mount Hermon is blessed with an amazing umbrella of safety. We're part of an insurance collaborative with a number of very large other ministries, such as Young Life. And the simplest way for me to explain this to you is we self-insure each other. And it's a very affordable, effective, it's been a model we've been using for quite a long time. If we went out onto the commercial scene, if you will, we would be priced out of it. You know, and one other thing I want to mention, Nate was talking about how we've seen God at work in all this process, and the prayer needs in terms of our supervisors and the processes they'll go through, and we're very optimistic with that. A couple of months ago, I was in a situation where I was with Renee and Lori Schlepper. Renee is one of our trustees, and many of you know he's a pastor here at local church. And Renee was sharing with me, and in Santa Cruz County, I would tell you Renee is somewhat of a celebrity. He oversees a large church, and he has a great impact. And so he's down at the courthouse, Santa Cruz, you know, municipal buildings down there. And one of the supervisors comes up to him, and they're talking, and they know each other, and says to him basically, so Renee, besides, and the supervisor, by the way, is not a believer, not a follower of Jesus, but certainly knows what Renee does. And he says, so Renee, beside this preaching stuff that you do, what else are you involved in? And he lists off a couple things. And then he says, I'm a trustee at Mount Hermon. And the guy goes, Mount Hermon? And while they're talking, these two other ladies walk up who formerly had been in fairly significant positions with the county recs department. And, you know, with the downsizing and everything else, their situations change a little bit. So now they're involved in the conversation. And he says, Mount Hermon, and the two other gals there say, Mount Hermon? He's like, yeah. He goes, and he's just kind of waiting, uh-oh, what's coming next? And they go, we love Mount Hermon. Now, I love Rene to death, but he is such a great storyteller. I had to, and this was in a little privacy. I said, Rene, really? Is that, I mean, did you? He goes, no, that's real. They go, we love Mount Hermon. And he says, that's great. Why? And they said, that piece of land, that's what they were calling it then, that park, that bike park that you all are building, we are so excited about the impact that's going to have. And we're hopeful that that will be a model for the future where you have a private organization like Mount Hermon partnering and putting together something that's going to have an impact and open doors to the public, because we, municipality, we cannot afford to do that in the future. That opportunity is gone, and we desperately need that to make an impact in our community. So we feel very confident with that particular supervisor, and all we need is two more, so pray for those next two.
Who else? What else have we got? Okay, Barbara.
With a bike park and the way you have described how people will have entree to it, are there bikes going to be, are you going to be renting the kind of bikes that you need to do the training of the particular kinds of biking? Or are people going to bring their own bikes? Are you going to give advice on what to buy? And how are you thinking about all that is going to work?
Yeah, great question. Didn't mention that specifically, but we are in that concept of collaboration. We recognize here at Mount Hermon, we do really good at having awesome facilities. We do really, really good at developing world-class programs. We're not necessarily experts in operating a retail bike shop, at least not yet. And so we have been looking for someone to collaborate with, and we found them in Epicenter Bike Shops. So they're a local bike shop owner and his fiance that have two shops that have been just really, really involved locally in the mountain bike community as advocates, building pump tracks, you know, helping organize the festival, all this kind of stuff. So we're going to be collaborating with them where they're going to have a retail facility right adjacent to the park where folks can, you know, purchase tires or helmets or kind of any of the things that they might need. But then Epicenter is actually going to provide and operate our rental fleet. So short answer is yes. So we'll have them basically providing all the different kinds of bikes that we might need. And then we're working strategically right now with Trek Bicycles, one of the big three bicycle manufacturers out there. And we're trying to figure out what level of involvement they're going to have, but they're definitely going to have a high level of involvement as far as providing bikes and product at either reduced or free rates for our staff and as well as for the rental program. So yeah, so that'll be available for folks. And one of the goals as far as the programs is that we can package them in such a way where you can get park entry, a rental bike, all the safety gear you need, and a lesson at an affordable, kind of attractive rate. You know, one of our big targets is to get beginner and intermediate riders into the park. And so the best way to do that is by packaging those things together, where you don't have to go out and buy a $1,500 bike to go have fun. You can just get this package and you can go do it for half a day with your friends and family.
But if you have your own bike and you wanted to bring it,
right,
and
then you can.
Passes a safety test, you know, we'd check it out and make sure that, you know, it comes under our standards, then you could use your own bike.
Yep.
Okay. Rebecca.
I appreciate the vision of bringing outreach to the community, but my question is, at what point is Jesus brought in? Is it overtly stated, you know, or is it just after relationships have been built? That's my question.
I think the simple answer is both. So it's really going to depend on the type of program, and that goes with that idea that we need to be flexible and we need to recognize that folks are on a journey. So for our summer day camps, for example, you know, we could advertise those as a Christian summer bike-focused day camp, you know, and then that's going to look really similar to maybe like a Redwood camp kind of experience with structured Bible times, all that sort of stuff. Some of the other events will probably use a little bit more of a Young Life model. where it would be really great if we can partner with some of the local pro riders, where, you know, they're the draw. And then there's even one or two of the local pro riders that know Jesus, thank God. And you know, they can then do a little bit of that Young Life model where they're interacting with the kids, they're having a great time, and it's like, oh, by the way, if you're interested, I'm sharing my testimony over here while we have some snacks. And then, you know, that's the model. And then really the third model is very much that counselor or that coach-driven relationship model, where that's going to be really powerful, especially in those 9 and 12-week programs where, you know, you get a group of 12 kids or whatever for 9 weeks. Those conversations are going to happen.
This is a question we often get about adventure ministries that are already existing too, is, you know, well, I know somebody who came and did the Canopy Tour and no one prayed with them or no one shared the gospel with them in that 2-hour block. I'm like, no, that's, for postmoderns, that kind of, uninvited proselytizing will not draw them one step closer to Jesus. It will push them one step further away. And so that's why, though many have suggested it, we don't start every Canopy Tour with a word of prayer, or we don't say, now on platform 9, before you get off the platform, you're going to hear the bullet points of the gospel. Those types of things will effectively push people away from Jesus. And so even though some of the moderns on the tour are disappointed when they get off because they're like, well, there was no, like, altar call on the platform, you know? But we're being very cognizant of who we have invited. And so, like, I like it when guides say, and while you're on the course, if, you know, we're going to encourage you, if you want us to pray with you, you know, to, like, put it out there, and then people can invite or respond to it, but not to impose it. If people ask questions about what is this place or what do you do or what's your mission, to respond to that as questions are asked, but not to, like, preach through the experience. Does that make sense? And often a guide will be giving an illustration, and somebody in the group will say, well, that's like the church, or that's like, you know, this or whatever. And then the guy can say, yeah, exactly, and you can find that in the Bible. One of my favorite guides was talking about the tree planted by, you know, look at that tree and what it's like in this tree. What's the difference? Well, this one's by the creek and that one's farther away. And she said, yeah, it's like a wise man wrote about the tree planted by streams of living water. And she didn't have to say, the Bible said, you know, she was planting seeds like Jer was talking about before. So the bike park will happen organically that way too. Organic is a very postmodern word. Sprinkle your language with that.
It's a little overused, I think, too.
But the guide has to, the guide or the instructor will be attentive to the person right in front of them and getting a read on where they're at in their spiritual journey and what kind of language, the modern or the postmodern language, is going to be received by them, and then they will strategically and intentionally use whatever they think is going to, in their judgment, draw that person one step closer to Jesus.
And you know, Rebecca, when you and Justin got married, my hunch is that you had to kind of find your way through a variety of things. When Laurie and I got married a little over 31 years ago now, one of the most interesting differences for us in terms of our spiritual formation as a couple was this. I grew up back in the Midwest in the Grace Brethren tradition, and that's a very structured tradition. And and if I went to church on Sunday and at the end of that service there was not an altar call, there was a problem. I mean, what are you doing? We got to wrap this up. That's the way I was programmed. Lori had been programmed differently. And as we sought to find that common ground, I mean, we had very valid points. We had to find that place that would work for both of us, because I learned very quickly that there's not just one way to touch a heart and to bring someone to Jesus. And that was 31 years ago, and that's ancient history. But same kind of thing going on today.
And for those of you who know JR and Lori, JR is a modern, and Lori is a postmodern. Mary.
Or no, go ahead. We'll go. Good.
It's fun to be a 66-year-old postmodern. Yes.
Mary Harrow is a postmodern.
I knew it. I just love the way, this is not a question, this is just a comment. But I love the way this ministry is extending Mount Hermon into the community. Because there are people, those of us who've lived here for 40 years or more, or even less, know that we are seen sometimes as a cult up here. People think of us as some kind of closed community, very cultish, very strange. And those of us, of course, who've come here for years, we know that's not the case. But by extending our ministry into Felton and with a park like this, I just think it changes our image in the community, and we just feel it's wonderful, wonderful outreach. So yay, yay.
Thanks, Mary.
I've witnessed postmodern. I fully agree with your techniques. I think this is going to be amazing. My question is this: just like the woman who found the cross and asked, "Who is this?" If you don't put something out there for them to ask about, how are they going to know to ask about something they don't even know exists? So my question is the mission going to be stated somewhere? Is there going to be a Bible verse somewhere? You can be friendly and kind to the cows come home, and someone will still just think you're a friendly, kind person and not wonder then the purpose behind it. Or so I guess that's my question. Is something going to be overtly stated somewhere?
You can.
As JR said, there's a bit of feeling our way, and I think that's where we're at in the Adventure Ministries program right now. There's not a lot of Bible verses on the walls or anything when you come into the Adventure Center, but we've talked about creating some displays like you would see at Henry Cow or other forests that talk about the redwoods and talk about the ecosystem and the root systems, etc. And how we would introduce like Bible verses into those is maybe there's some quotes by Theodore Roosevelt or, you know, Ansel Adams, and then also Bible verses. So you put Bible verses or Bible references out there, but not in a way that is cheesy or, you know, only that. But you introduce it as voices alongside other credible voices that people would respect and appreciate. And then you have literature available as well that if they say, what is this place? And this happens all the time in our corporate team building programs and our adventure programs. We rent the Sequoia course in Discovery Grove for birthday parties. And we run rec leagues, like basketball leagues for kids in the winter. And when people come out here and they're like, what is this place? And we're able to give them literature that describes our programs and our values and our mission. And we're not covert, and like we don't hide that we are a Christian ministry. And like the Lives Transform thing, you know, Nate tells a story about a guy who called and said, now I saw on your website that you transform lives. If I do the canopy tour, will my life be transformed? And you know, they're like, well, when you get here, let's talk about that. And they ended up sharing the gospel with them and praying with them. You know, this is how lives are transformed here, not by the canopy tour, but by the opportunity you have to encounter Christ. And they were able to pray with that guy. And, you know, so the fact that their jerseys say lives transformed and on them is just specifically. So to answer your question, we are trying to learn how to be very skilled at putting things out there that make evident our faith and values without in any way creating barriers. And I think we're still learning. We wouldn't say, oh yeah, we've got that down. We're really good at that. It's something that we are learning. This adventure ministry, the Canopy Tour, just exploded. You know, once Nate got here and started applying some entrepreneurial marketing, et cetera, to it, you know, we do nearly 30,000 people a year through that Canopy Tour, and only 3,000 of them are overnight guests at Mount Hermon. So that's, it just went crazy. We went from, I think when I came here, we had one full-time staff member. Now there's like 90 employees in the adventure recreation realm. And so we've been blessed by that tremendous ministry, but there is some degree that we're still learning how to do well what Nate described up here. We have the heart and mindfulness and prayerfulness and intentionality. We haven't got it all figured out yet.
I think it's interesting too. Just there's, I personally have a really hard time finding anybody that's doing what we're doing. You know, there just aren't any other camps out there that I can look to that are doing this kind of activity, adventure-based ministry specifically for folks that don't know Christ. So in a sense, you know, we're getting to be trendsetters, but, you know, like Lisa said, we're definitely feeling our way through it, and we're excited to do a bunch of good learning. That said, it's been really encouraging. Even this summer, I've had the opportunity to kind of give this talk at some Friday morning breakfasts that JR and his team set up. And it's been neat to interact with folks from all over the country that this resonates with, that they're almost at the same spot we're at. They're like, we know there's a need. We have plans to do something about it. We're moving forward. Let's keep talking. So, you know, it's happening in New Mexico. It's happening in Texas. It's happening in Vermont, even around bike stuff specifically. So I think we're on the cusp of some really exciting new ministry and some really exciting new ways to do ministry that's going to reach this generation.
I think Nate talks about this often, that the questions people ask our guides are not evidence for the resurrection or what's this point of theology. The questions our guides get asked all the time are, you know, I'm gay, do you judge me and reject me? Or, you know, things like that. They when they know we're a Christian place, the questions they ask and the things they want to test are you going to act the way I expect Christians to act and, you know, somehow box me out or judge me or evidence in some way that you disapprove of me and my, you know, partner who I'm on this canopy tour with. And so a lot of what the guides have the opportunity to do is just authentically love and care about people, even as they learn that they're hostile toward Christianity or have very different values. And that alone will move them closer to Jesus as they go away from that experience and feel like those people were Christians, but they didn't act the way I, you know, thought they would, or they received me and they loved me more like Jesus would than the way their caricature of, you know, Christians would. And in that case, we don't want to be saying, now let me give you a tract on your way out, you know, because then that plays into the cliche that they don't want to associate with.
Yeah, we got to take another question. But my simple thing is, when I hear this, it's complicated. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just complicated. So we're not going to stand back and fear that, but yeah, through prayerful support, we're going to continue to faithfully step forward and find that best path. And it's kind of like the GPS system that you got here with, probably. You put the thing in, you take the wrong turn by choice or by accident, and it starts to reprogram, but it's going to get you back. That's what we're going to do, okay? We're not going to make all perfect decisions. But we know where we want to go, and we know where God calls us to go. And so when we get bumped off a little bit here and someone's able to help, then God, through His Holy Spirit and grace, is going to put us back there, and we're going to get there.
Scott has a question. But I just want to say, I know many of you have heard Roger. I think if Roger was here, he would probably bring back up the statement that he used a lot when we were getting ready to build the field house, that recreation is the community well. Of our current culture, like the community well was in Jesus' time. That's what recreation is now. And so I think we are trying to create those community wells where people will come and gather and we have a chance to have a relationship. If they don't come, we don't even have a chance to have that relationship. So now it's a winsome, inviting, safe place. And that's, I think, what we want to be. So, Scott.
So I don't understand modern or postmodern. To me, it seems like we're using an indirect approach as an outreach, and I don't have any issues with that. I guess my question then becomes is, if we're going to go down this road, what kind of data are we going to collect that allows us to validate this model over time?
That's a great question. That's a difficult task too. So I would put that in that same category of, we don't totally know, but we want to figure it out. Because yeah, I think there's and I could share stories for hours just about, you know, personal interactions that I've had, that guides have had. So there's very much the story-based evidence.
I was going to say, Scott's obviously a modern. He wants some data. Yeah.
Which is just fine.
The postmoderns want anecdotal. They want stories of lives transformed.
Right. And so, you know, someone that's maybe in the more modern mindset wants to see some numbers of how many people have made commitments or have had conversion experiences. So we may track that as well. And that's part of the challenge and the opportunity that I think you're hearing about, is that we want to and we must continue ministering to folks with a more modern mindset. We must also do so for postmoderns. So in terms of data tracking, we have to have metrics that speak to both audiences. And so, again, people are still figuring out how to do that. You know, there's not very many good evidence-based research kinds of things that are out there of, you know, how do we track these things. But we're excited to try and figure them out and hopefully be a model for other folks.
If you have any ideas, let us know.
One more. Wolf. Okay, let's do Wolf, and then we'll do Chris. Oh, you got one there?
Well, first of all, your plans are very exciting, and I've been coming to Mount Hermon over a period of probably 50 years, and it's been very wonderful to see how your approach to ministry has evolved. I understand that you have other plans for the Fountain Meadows, so my question is off the bike topic. So I was just wondering if you have plans that would involve reaching the older people of the community, some of us who are not ready to jump on a bike and do flips and all of that. So are there walking paths? I know that maybe there wouldn't be an opportunity to minister through a walking path, but are there plans to reach that older community?
I'll take that one. The trails through where the bikes will be coming down, there won't be any paths through there because you might get taken out. But but part of our vision for this property from the very beginning is to create an intergenerational space, and that's partly what the spray park is. It's like a zero-depth water park, they call it, which if you just picture more like the cement with the shooting fountains and the little rain, you know, downspouts. And it's like a little water park that doesn't require a lifeguard because you can't drown on cement, but where you can get wet. There'll be in the aerial adventure park, if you would picture it kind of like the Sequoia Adventure Course, which has, what, about 13 elements or so, only it will have like 70 elements and be three stories, and you'll be able to access that from various points. There's an observation deck, so that will be designed to be very three or four generation friendly, where a grandparent could bring their adult children and kids. They could all come, and maybe some of them are on the bike park, some of them are on the adventure course, but adults even who have mobility challenges could be out in, immersed in the experience on the aerial adventure park, able to interact, encourage, take pictures and share the experience with their kids and grandkids. You won't see it on the chart because we weren't ready to submit to the county, but we're hoping someday to have like a miniature golf element down there. So we've tried to look at different types of experiences that would allow a family to come over from San Jose or to come down from family camp and enjoy the park together. And some of those will have various degrees of ability to be in relational ministry and to share the gospel, but it's definitely going to be designed that you can enjoy it as a family.
Okay, we're going to do last two only because we have kids to pick up and food. But here's the deal. They'll be around. We'll be at lunch. We have lots of time to answer other questions.
Short question. Short question.
Well, actually, it's more a comment. I've gone on the website and checked things out. And with your adventure course, for instance, the comments that I read are very, very positive. And it's not inexpensive to get on that course, but what I read is that people, and this is the secular world, that says, I definitely want to come back because of Charlie or because of Jonathan or whoever it was there, who was their guide. So it's very, very positive, and I was very encouraged about that.
We have a question.
I appreciate hearing all this about the Fountain Meadows, but I know that there's a lot of big changes and improvements planned for Redwood Camp. So this is not a short question, and I'm wondering if I'll just follow up with it later, but just wanted to hear anything about that.
You come back next year, and we're going to talk all about that, all right? Well, you can talk to me personally one-on-one, but it is right around the corner before we go out with that.
So can we take one more?
Yeah, one more, real quick.
Well, I just wanted to share a story from John Fisher that really connected here that came to mind. He talked about a young man who was excited about evangelism and went out for a week with his Ask Me About Jesus shirt. And somehow nobody asked him. And he was dejected, and the next day he was already on the bus, and I stuck up a conversation with him, and they started talking about life and then about God and all sorts of great stuff, and the guy missed his bus stop, but he really didn't care. And he thought afterwards, why did this work? I was not wearing my Ask Me About Jesus shirt. I was wearing my Fender guitar shirt, and this guy played guitar, and I played guitar too. So I'm going to say, as a modern, and I may be one of the youngest moderns in the room, I am a bit trepidatious, or other big fancy words meaning a little queasy, but exactly where are we going here? But going forward in the dark, trusting God, and we will give you feedback if we think you're a little bit GPS is going sideways. Thank you.
Thanks, Jeremy. Okay.
All right, we're going to wrap it up. Let's say thank you to Nate and Lisa. I wanted to just share something real quick with you. Excuse me. Quick announcements. The pool and the field house will be open until 5 o'clock, and you're welcome to stick around. We do need you to get out of your room, if possible, before 5 o'clock, but right after lunch, if you could get checked out. But stick around and enjoy both of those. That would be wonderful. We're having them staffed for that purpose. We're going to have to go get our kids here in just a moment. I wanted to read a little mail that really should be for you guys to hear. This first one's from a gentleman named Alex, and he is 18 years old, and he made a gift, first-time gift of $30. And he sent it online, and he wrote a little comment. And he says, I want to say thank you for your service and what you guys are doing at Mount Hermon. My family has been going to Mount Hermon since I was born, 18 years now. And I can say that Mount Hermon has always strengthened my walk with the Lord. I hope one day to be a part of the staff at Mount Hermon. And as I go off to college and I'm studying to hopefully be a camp director one day, God bless you, and I hope some of the money that I'm giving to you guys from my summer jobs goes to benefit Mount Hermon. Pretty cool. There was a couple more, but I just want you to know that that whole idea of going forward in the dark, trusting the Lord, I mean, that's not a better way to close. That's how Mount Hermon started, and we never forget that today. And you all are a part of that, and we do welcome the feedback and the questions. And we love the questions from all of you because, see, we know where your heart is. And we know that you are part of our family, and you deeply care about where we're at. And the questions are coming from loving concern. And so thank you so much for that.
Will you mention that we recorded all of this?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We've recorded all of this, and there's a couple of really cool ways that we're going to be able to get it out to you. One of the ways that we're looking at is, you know, being able to go through iTunes and download it for free, et cetera. So the whole thing with Lisa and I did, et cetera, here's what we're going to do. We're going to send you guys a follow-up letter thanking you for being here, and we will have the exact specifics in terms of how you can go about that, okay? Because some of us are a little more web-enabled than others, and we understand that. So we'll give you a couple of options, and we'll follow up from there. And if for some reason you don't hear from us and you want to know, then you pick up the phone and give us a call, okay? We're going to go to lunch now, and I'm just going to pray. We'll just pray right now for the meal, and we'll enjoy it together. And you're, again, welcome to stay as long as... Wait a minute, one more thing. I'm sorry, Carrie, I can't hear you. Oh, I forgot the last video once again, okay? So I'm going to pray. We'll watch this last video, and then we will go to lunch. But let me just set the video before you see it. We had an opportunity to partner with a ministry a few months ago. And what we realized is there's a lot of opportunity for people that maybe don't have a lot of extra discretionary cash that we weren't really providing in terms of being able to partner with Mount Hermon. I think in terms of younger people that you know, are just starting out in their career, single family, single parent homes, et cetera. What would be some ways, and a lot of people in this room, where we could leverage our ability to give to the kingdom work in even a bigger way? And we partnered with an organization that is called iDonate. It's not affiliated with Apple, and I think you'll enjoy watching this video. So let me pray. We'll watch the video, then we'll go to lunch. Father, we are so thankful. Thank you for just being here, and thank you for loving us. Thank you for working through us in your perfect ways, inviting us to be part of your process. And Father, I thank you so much for each person here, their heart for you, their love for Mount Hermon because of what you do here. And I pray that you would bless them. I pray that you would encourage them. I pray that you would continue to enable them to have an impact, not just here at Mount Hermon, but wherever it is that you choose to use them. And now as we go to lunch, we thank you for that food, and we just thank you. We pray for Roger. Pray for his continued healing and strength. We look forward to having him back in his leadership capacity. We pray all these things in Jesus' name. Amen.